A lot of us dream of going on some big once-in-a-lifetime adventure, but very few of us actually do it, and even fewer wait until we're in our 60s to accomplish some long trek. Well, Mike Link and Kate Crowley did it. They walked more than 1,500 miles around Lake Superior, 1,555, but who's counting? It took them 5 months, and when they got back, they wrote a book about their experiences, and the book is titled Going Full Circle, a 1,555-mile walk around the world's largest lake. Well, we're lucky to have Mike Link and Kate Crowley, who are naturalists and adventurers. They're with me in the studio today to talk about their trek around the greatest of the Great Lakes, as a lot of us like to call it. And good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Jeff.
And welcome to our Superior Studios. How appropriate.
Thank you very much, John. We were fortunate to have you guys following us around the lake, and it's delightful to be here now to sum it up.
Well, I know that you were here, you were in these studios, just before you left on your trek, and kind of gave us the lowdown on what you were going to be doing, and now you're here at the end of it. I think that's kind of a nice circle to make.
Mm-hmm.
The first and most obvious question, which I'm sure you've been asked dozens if not hundreds of times, is what in the world were you thinking? What led to this idea? I mean, were you sitting around at the breakfast table one morning and one of you just said, hey, you know what I think? I think it'd be a great idea to walk around Lake Superior. What do you think?
Well, it was almost like that, only we weren't sitting around. We were actually walking when this idea popped into our head, but it didn't start as the idea of walking around the lake. It started, we were actually walking on the Superior hiking trail, and it was about 3 years before Mike was supposed to retire from the Audubon Center, where he'd been the executive director for eventually 38 years. And it just occurred to me, you know, Mike, on the last day of work, you should just walk away, not in the sense of turning your back on the Audubon Center or your work, but that you're going into a new phase of life. And so go out the door, go down the driveway to County Road 27 and to the bike trail, Munger Bike Trail, and start walking north. Our house is about 20 miles from the Audubon Center. And he said, well, yeah, that's an idea, but why don't I just keep walking to Duluth? And I thought, well, I guess, yeah, that works. That's just another 50 miles. But after that, something popped in his head. I'm sure it was his idea, not mine, and because I wouldn't have ever thought of that. But he said, well, why don't we just walk around the lake? And as soon as he said it, I thought, well, that is kind of an intriguing idea. We wondered whether anybody had ever done that, and it seemed like a really cool adventure that a couple of people in their 60s might be able to do.
Well, has anyone ever done it?
We know of one young man who attempted to do this back in 1986. And we also know of the grandmother's walk that was done by the First Nation women around the lakes. Now, they followed the road. As far as we know, that's it. And so we're the first to follow the shore. We're the first couple. We're the first senior couple. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of firsts that you can make, but it's a pretty short list. And the shoreline itself, as far as we know, we're the first to actually be on as much of the shoreline as we could walk.
Well, yeah, there are places where there really isn't a shoreline to walk on.
That's right. Yeah. We had to go out to alternatives at that point. We had to turn to road, sometimes to railroad tracks. When we were lucky, there was a Voyageur Trail or a State Park Trail or the North Country Trail that was near the lake. We could take that. But we wouldn't take those designated trails if they took us too far away. We tried to stay as close as we could, which made some pretty interesting times on those alternatives.
Well, at one place, I believe you actually had to get in a canoe and go from point to point on the lake itself. So
right there on the Canadian shore, there's a bulge of land. If you have a map of Lake Superior to look at, it's the Pukasaw Peninsula, and that is truly wild land. Half of it is Crown land. The other half is Pukasaw National Park. And in the Crown land, we did all kinds of research beforehand to see if we could possibly walk through that land. But there's no trails, there's no old railroad grades, there's no logging roads, and it's extreme topography with a lot of cliffs.
Mm.
And then the park itself, halfway through that peninsula is the park, and they do have some coastal trails. But that particular summer of 2010, they were doing major trail work, and they'd taken out the bridges that go across the canyon. So that was out. That left us with two other options. One was to walk the road, which would have been at least 10, 11, 12 days, 100 miles away from the lake. We never would have seen the lake. Or we could get into a boat and take a 10-day, which turned into an 11-day trip, water trip, around the peninsula. And we went in a Voyageur canoe with 10 of our friends and two guides.
Wow. That just sounds so exciting.
Well, it was.
It was more exciting in some ways than we had hoped for.
That was one of the areas where we saw the changes that are going on with the warming climate, because the temperature of the lake was so warm.
20 degrees warmer at the surface that summer.
Than they'd recorded. And so when the water is warmer, it's lighter in it, and the wind stirs it up more. So consequently, we were facing bigger waves than we should have for that period of time, and we got windbound on parts and all or all of 7 days out of what was supposed to be a 10-day canoe trip, which turned out to be 11.
Well, I don't want to get hung up on this, but most people probably don't know what a Voyageur canoe looks like. I mean,
that's
this
true.
Isn't the kind that you the aluminum thing you strap on to the top of your to the top of your minivan and head to the river with. This is
a big canoe, and it wasn't traditional. I mean, it was made of
fiberglass,
I guess. But it's big enough to hold 14 people and gear for 10 days. It weighed 600 pounds. Without any people or gear in it to begin with. So it was really heavy when we loaded it up. But it was so wonderful to be traveling with friends. That made it that much more special.
And then we could explore shoreline that we couldn't have gotten to by each campsite. We could walk out to the headlands and explore more of the shoreline wherever we could.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a real linear thinker, so I want to back up.
Okay.
and take this from the standpoint, you've made the decision to go. Now, the book, and one of the fascinating things about the book for me was the description, the detailed description you put in about all the plans, all the planning you had to do, because this isn't something you get up one morning and say, well, I'm gonna throw a few things in the old rucksack and take off around Lake Superior.
That's right.
You really had to talk about some of the challenges that you anticipated before you ever left and how you dealt with them.
Well, one of the big aspects of it is that because there's no single trail, we knew we could walk up to normal high water line, which meant right at the edge of the water. We could walk that in front of people's cabins and places. We knew we couldn't camp there. We couldn't build latrines, build a fire. We were greeted warmly by so many hundreds of people around, all the way around the lake, were waiting for us to walk in front. But we couldn't stop there. That meant, first of all, we had to figure out how to get on and off the lake. We had to figure out how far around the lake was, because we had all kinds of different measurements. And I used a little piece of string that I cut to 15 miles to correspond with the scale on the map, and I just placed that around, and it turned out we came back on the day I predicted, so I was happy with that. But we had to figure out where we were going to go, where we were going to run into obstacles like the shipping channel between Minnesota Point and Wisconsin Point, how we were going to get across that. And there were other harbors and shipping points we had to figure out how to get across, and of course across the bridge at Sault Ste. Marie. There were just so many of those little details that we had to try to anticipate ahead of time.
Well, and not only there are a lot of streams and creeks and rivers that flow into Lake Superior that drain the watershed. How did you get across those?
Well, we were pretty lucky in 2010 in the sense that it was a very dry spring. People forget, but that March, we did not have one snowflake fall in all of Minnesota anyway, and I think Wisconsin was similar. So that was to our advantage, because the rivers and streams were quite a bit lower, and we did, in fact, cross about 300 of them by foot. If it looked like it was going to be over our thighs, the point where we might have to swim, I said no way, and we'd find a bridge. In one particular place, we walked up the river until we came to a house, and I sent Mike ahead. I called him the talking pathfinder, and he talked to the gentleman who lived there and asked whether we could borrow or if they could possibly shuttle us across in a canoe. And he took a little bit of time to think about it after we explained what we were doing, and then he volunteered, just take my canoe across and leave it, and I'll get it later. And we thought that was really nice. But then he paused and said, "No, wait a minute. You saw that green canoe at that cabin just up the stream there a bit?" And we said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, why don't you just take that across, and we'll get that later." And I said, "Okay." And as we pulled it out, we thought that was so nice of him to loan his neighbor's canoe to us.
And we hope the neighbor got it back by now.
People were so generous, even with their neighbor's property.
But you had to make a plan for where you would walk and where you would stay, and yes. You walked this trip by the two of you, but you had a support team. Talk about
that. We did. We had a young woman who had worked for me at the Audubon Center. She'd been an intern, and then she'd worked for us, and she lives in Cromwell, Minnesota, a very small town between the center down by Sandstone and Duluth. And we were able to rent. Her mother had bought this RV, and so we rented this RV from her mom and hired her, paid her to be our driver and to take some photographs and help us with food preparation and some other things along the way. And she did some other presentations to some of the school groups and youth groups as we went. So she was vital to us. We had another couple that came in because for 3 weeks of the trip, actually 4 weeks of the trip, she went home, and we had another couple, Beth and Bill Blank, that ran the Solbakken's Resort, or used to, who filled in during that time. But we needed that support, again, because we couldn't camp in front of people's houses and cabins and on private land, so we had to find a way in and out and arrange for pickup and delivery at those spots. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we also had to be able to get in. We had arranged to do talks because, for us, it's always about learning and teaching. No matter what we do, there's always that component. And so we did a number of public programs as we went around, and sometimes she'd have to pick us up and take us to.
I think we should mention her name.
Amanda Hakala.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, there's a fine Finnish name.
Yes, it is.
I've always been fascinated by Lake Superior, and I've lived around it or near it for pretty much my entire so-called adult life, and I think a lot of other people are too. And I'd like to give them a chance to ask some questions and talk to you about your journey. Here's how that works. Here's a phone number to use: 800-486-8655. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, and you can find the Kathleen Dunn Program on Facebook and leave a comment or a question there, and it'll show up on my screen, and then I'll share it with everybody else. Mike, we're going to take a break here, but I'd like, as we go into the break, maybe you could read a piece. You had some pieces picked out from the book that you wanted to share.
Sure.
And why don't you read one of them now? Give us the setup for this and
sure.
Read it, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and maybe some people will join us on the phone.
All right. This is one, and I can read it because I'm the one who looks bad in this particular one. But we went around the Huron Mountain Peninsula between the Keweenaw Abbey and then Marquette. This is coming down towards Marquette. We've gone through the Huron Mountain Club. We're joined by Bob Horswill. Bob is a retired orthopedic surgeon, and we were walking with him. And the first day, he pulled Kate aside and said, "I don't think Mike's going to make it because of my knees and joints," which we've reminded him since that he said that, I'm happy to say. But we went, he got us permission to get through another place called Granite Loma that has restrictions. And after he'd gone through that, we took photos of one another, then descended the concrete steps and the ramp past the marina. The beach was short and ended in a massive volcanic rock, but Mike thought we might be able to climb up to them to get around the point. We knew there was a road somewhere behind the line of trees, and I imagine Bob wondered why we didn't choose that route. scrambling up the black rocks, we soon got to a big gap that blocked our way. We bushwhacked to find a way, going through a forest of thick firs with tightly intertwined dead branches. Bob was tickled to find pretty twin flowers growing on moss-covered boulder, but otherwise I suspect he was not having much fun. At one point, Mike, in his usual enthralled way, chimed out, "I bet no one's ever been here." And Bob snorted, "Yeah, not even the animals are dumb enough to come through here." We continued to follow Mike, who used the GPS to guide us over the rocks and through the brush toward the road, stopping briefly on a knob of earth covered with lichens and moss where you could almost see the lake. Mike said with a beatific smile, "Isn't this a beautiful spot?" I agreed, but he didn't get much of a response from Bob. We finally broke through the vegetation, coming out into a long-sought and long-promised road. "That was really fun," Mike said. Bob sat down to tie his shoe. With a look of disbelief, he said, "You're really weird." "I've been told that before," Mike admitted. Then Bob was laughing. "Maybe you need another poke in the head," he said, referring to the bump on Mike's forehead from running into a birch branch earlier.
The book is Going Full Circle, a 1,555-mile walk around the world's largest lake. We have the authors of that book with us, Mike Link and Kate Crowley, wondering what you think. If you have questions, and we do have an email from Stephen Madison. We'll get to that after the break. But wondering what you think. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, talk@WPR.org, and you can also find the Kathleen Dunn Program on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10:23. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about the book this hour, Going Full Circle. It's a story of Mike Link and Kate Crowley's 5-month hike around the world's largest lake, 1,555 miles. Wow, that's a long trek. It took 5 months, and it's not like you got any time off. You alluded to something when you were talking, you were reading the passage, Mike, before we went to the break, about your joint issues. You had some health concerns going into this project. How did you face up to that, and how did that play out on the journey?
Well, it added a layer that I wasn't anticipating when we first dreamed about this, but I had issues with my joints that started to flare up just before the hike, because I made the mistake of walking 2,000 miles to get ready to walk 1,500 miles. And so I crossed over a threshold and wore them out before I began. So we got out there, and I had a tremendous problems with my joints, often to the point where I couldn't sleep at night. I'd sleep about every third night because they'd always ache at night. And subsequent to that, I've had two hips replaced and an arthroscopy in a knee, and I'm probably going to have that knee replaced. And I've got back problems, and I've had 5 eye operations. But other than that, perfect.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Kate, what were you thinking as you prepared for this, and you obviously knew what was going on with Mike? What were your thoughts?
Well, in terms of preparation, I thought he was crazy to walk that far, but that's what he wanted to do, so he was going to do it. And I admit that I did not spend a great deal of time. I did walk and bike in preparation for the trip, but I kind of figured, you know, I'm going to walk every day, and I'll get in shape as I'm walking, too.
Well, Stephen Madison writes, all who cannot see this interview want to know if these two hikers are extremely fit. Did they start fit, or did their bodies change, and did they lose fat and gain muscle mass on the journey? How did the journey change you physically?
Well, it absolutely did make me better fit. I lost 20-some pounds.
30
pounds, I guess.
But who's
it was
counting?
Yeah.
Oh, I was,
okay.
Because I only lost 8.
So I was really, in that sense, really in excellent shape. Unfortunately, the next year, having gone through the 8 operations, I slipped back. I'm looking forward to the next expedition because I got to get back in shape. But it made tremendous differences, and it reduced by far the bad cholesterol went down. The good went up. My blood pressure went down. It was wonderful. I mean, I was in just excellent shape if my joints and I had not fallen apart.
And Kate, what about you?
Well, I know I finished that hike in great physical condition. Like I said, I only lost 8 pounds, but muscle tone, everything was better, cholesterol, blood pressure too. Unfortunately, it's been 2 years since that, and I wondered when we stopped walking, you know, how am I going to maintain this? Because I'm not walking 12 miles a day to keep this up. And it's been a struggle, as it is for all of us middle-aged and older people to maintain, and I've gained weight back, so... Okay. I'm looking forward to that next expedition, too.
But you were both pretty active before you went on this.
Yes.
It wasn't like a couple of couch potatoes like me decided one day, gosh, I think a 1,500-mile hike sounds like a great idea to get in shape.
Well, you know, that's because our whole career was spent in environmental and outdoor education. We both were active outdoor people, and so doing an adventure like this didn't seem that far-fetched.
Mm-hmm. There's this marvelous picture in the book, Kate, of you on the 29th of April as you're getting ready to launch this thing, and you're all bundled up, and it's a typical April picture along the shoreline of Lake Superior. For those who haven't been, April is a warm month inland, but right along the lake, it's generally pretty chilly. You had a scarf, you had a ski jacket on. I mean, you were really dressed for it. What were your thoughts as you stepped off on this thing, other than, man, it's cold out here?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was kind of funny because, again, as I said, it was a very mild spring. We could have started walking in March of that year.
Mm-hmm.
But April 2, beautiful, until April 28th.
Of course.
That's when this storm system moved in. And, you know, we thought, well, this is really appropriate because Lake Superior is in control. And it's going to show us what we may encounter. And personally, I'd rather walk in cold conditions than in heat. And so we just put on layers, and we did wonder, we hoped that this wasn't a system that was going to come in and stay, and in fact it left within a day or two. So it was exciting, and this is a wind as much as anything as we walked down that beach, blowing us along the way. But it was an exciting start.
One of the other features of Lake Superior in the spring and early summer, black flies. How were they?
They did not get us, I'm happy to say, but they were a major part of our planning. We went counterclockwise around the lake, which, to my fascination, just absolutely seemed to shock people. I don't know. We have a clockwise orientation or something. But I would then explain and say, if I went clockwise, I would start in Duluth about the time of the first black fly hatch. I'm going to walk 15 miles a day up that shore. That means just about every day for a week or two, I'm going to come to a new black fly hatch. That's not appealing to me.
So how did walking counterclockwise solve that problem?
Well, put me on the south shore, which of course meant that our latitude really didn't change. We didn't encounter. We don't have as many streams of the sort that have the large black fly hatches. So we would deal with a week or so of black flies, although they weren't bad at all on the Wisconsin side. And so we managed, by going across the south shore, we managed to avoid the major hatches that take place going up into Canada. And then we were also, as Kate said, she prefers not to walk in the extreme heat. So we walked the south shore during May and June. And then when it got really hot in July and August, we were in Canada. And so we were able to balance, by going that shore, we were able to balance out between the insects and the heat and get ourselves, as it turned out, perfectly. Now, I wouldn't say it would work every time, so we won't do it again.
what was the biggest surprise that you found on your trip?
Well, this is going to seem strange to people, maybe, but it was something we discovered in the very first days of the walk, and that had to do with litter. Now, if I ask people, what do you think we found mostly along the shore in terms of litter, people will say plastic bottles, plastic bags. It was balloons. We found Mylar balloons, latex balloons, inflated, deflated, stuck under branches, buried in the sand. It was every day, pretty much all the way around the lake. Unfortunately, most were on the Wisconsin and Michigan shoreline, I think because of prevailing winds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you have a party and you release those balloons, or intentionally or non-intentionally, the wind is going to take them someplace, and apparently many, many of them end up on our shore.
Huh. So, what was? Give me an example of something that you hadn't planned for that happened. You spent a lot of time. I mean, this was several years between the time you had this idea and you actually launched the trip in 2010. Mm-hmm. So, what was? I'm sure there must have been something that you hadn't anticipated, you hadn't planned for, that kind of popped up. Can you give me an example of something?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think one of the difficulties in answering is it was so open-ended that we were kind of expecting to be surprised every day, which we were. The lake surprised us many times, and sometimes the surprises could be really pleasant surprises too. We were we'd find ourselves so engaged with some of the rocks and the formations, it was almost difficult to keep going. I'm struggling to come up with.
Well, I think something logistically was we really didn't anticipate the costs involved of parking our RV camper every night at a park, or the expense of at a park or a campground, and of course up in Canada we knew gas would be more expensive, but just the fees for parking this RV for 145 nights was more than we had anticipated or thought about.
That was a big surprise.
Well, that raises another issue, though. You had to do some fundraising before you could embark on this trip.
We did.
And how did that work?
Well, we were fortunate. Actually, the most of the funds and the support came in the last month, which was, as we were approaching, we were a little bit nervous about it. It was a pretty low cost. I think, if we took what were the major costs, they were the vehicle, gas, and camping, and then the cost we paid Amanda to support us. Those were the three costs that dominated about 90% of our budget, which was about $25,000 for the 4.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we made appeals. We had some good support, and we had people who were really helping us to make connections here in Wisconsin. Jerry Phillips up at the Rittenhouse was one of our advisors, and we had advisors in all three states and in Canada who could help us make connections, and that was really important. I would say in reality that my big surprise was that we couldn't find a way through the Crown Land to walk. We talked to people in Environment Canada and Parks Canada and in the local community, and we really thought there has to be some way, but we were stopped on that, so we had to turn to the boat. So I think sometimes it's, we have this feeling that we can just kind of go everywhere, and whether it must be a trail or some way through. That was a surprise, and that was what generated us having to then turn to the Voyageur canoe. Otherwise, we had anticipated walking that.
Mm-hmm. Were you in physical danger during this trip?
We were and weren't. I mean, we were lucky that nothing really happened. I may have taken pains into it, but the fact was we were walking in the water. We were walking on wet rocks, sometimes rocks covered with algae. Sometimes we were walking in the rocks with waves coming against us because there was a cliff on one side, and the only way around it was to walk in the water. And we didn't slip and fall, but any one of those places, had we slipped, broken an ankle or a leg or damaged ourselves severely, that would have been the end of the trip. We were really fortunate to have. We did have one instance on the canoe trip where one of our young guides fell off a cliff and had to be evacuated from the island we were on by a helicopter. So he showed us what the danger was. Fortunately, us old-timers didn't have the same problem that the 18-year-old guide did.
Hmm. Wow, but that must have been a scary moment.
That was
extremely traumatic. It happened in the middle of the night. All of us were sleeping in an old lighthouse building on Otter Island, and we didn't even know he was missing until we heard his screams. And he made his way back to the house somehow, miraculously, in the middle of the night, the dark. And we had the other guide was extremely good in terms of first aid, and all the group came together to help. And then we luckily managed to get through our spot units. Our satellite transceivers managed to get in touch with the Park Service, and they sent the helicopter for him about 5 hours later.
Wow.
It was an island where we not only were in this middle of this wilderness, but also we had 3-plus meter waves, so we couldn't get out on our boats, and other boats couldn't get in to rescue.
Mm. Wow. And you tell that story in the book, too, by the way.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the phone number again, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, talking with Mike Link and Kate Crowley about their journey around the world's largest lake, Lake Superior, largest by surface area. It's 1/10 of the world's fresh water. And we're interested in what you might have to say about that trip. Maybe you've thought about taking a long trek, and maybe you've got some questions that you'd like to ask before you do it. Maybe you could get some advice here. I'm sure that Mike and Kate would be glad to share the things that they learned that might help you if you were considering a trip, not necessarily around Lake Superior, but some trek of your own. Maybe you've made a trek, and maybe you've done something similar to this, and you'd like to share your story with us. All of that is certainly appropriate this hour. Kate, you had a piece that you wanted to share from the book. We're going to take a break here in just a moment, come back and see if somebody wants to join us on the phone. We've got some emails to go through as well, but I wanted you to share another piece from the book, Going Full Circle.
Okay, well, this is a little snippet from a section in Michigan headed towards Whitefish Point, and it kind of gives a sense of what some of our sites were and our terrain. First of all, talking about this bird, really rare bird called the piping plover. We had never seen the very small pale plovers. They are one of North America's most endangered shorebirds. Past the researcher and nest area, we crossed through a grassy, wet swale. To our right, we saw another wire-fenced nest enclosure protecting the birds from animal predators and people. Ahead, near the water's edge, an adult plover skittered and weaved its way towards us. We came close enough for photos and video. For birders like ourselves, marking this bird on our life list was truly exciting. As if in celebration, our totem birds, a pair of sandhill cranes, lifted off and flew parallel to the lake, calling as they went. We came to the mouth of this vast wetland and stream complex and crossed it, still elated by our piping plover sighting. The beach stretched ahead of us for 10 miles before reaching Whitefish Point. This was one of those days when my sunglasses made the world so much prettier. Forget rose-colored glasses. I want to see the world through polarized lenses. The filter made all the colors more intense. On the downside, when I'd take the glasses off for a few minutes, everything seemed blah and lackluster until I readjusted to reality. With them on, the water was indescribable, about as close to Caribbean blue as a northern lake can get. I never tired of looking at the water. Mike, who rarely wears sunglasses, prefers the real essence of the moment and says he was equally enthralled with the reality of the sights and sights, both sights.
The book is Going Full Circle, a 1,555-mile walk around the world's largest lake. Mike Link and Kate Crowley wrote this book. They were the ones who made the journey. They're in the studio with me this morning to talk about it, and we're wondering what you think as well. 800-486-8655. We'll be back in just a moment with more with Mike and Kate. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10:42. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This week, Kathleen is on vacation, although I don't think she's walking around Lake Superior. We're talking about the book Going Full Circle, a 1,555-mile walk around the world's largest lake. Mike Link and Kate Crowley, who not only made the trek but wrote the book, are in the studio with me this morning, and you can join us as well at 800-486-8655. We've got some callers, and we'll be taking those in just a moment. First, if I can make my bifocals work here, I want to share an email from Jim in Genoa, Illinois. who writes, in 1997, I began a top-to-bottom hike of Wisconsin in an unsuccessful attempt to secure a classroom teaching position, leaving resumes along the route. I completed almost 200 miles before massive foot problems caused me to switch to a bicycle for the rest of the trek. Do your guests have any recommendations for footwear to be used for a project of this nature? I mean, boy, if you don't take care of your feet, you're not going to hike for very long.
That's for sure. I the interesting thing is that our next expedition is by bicycle, so we've made that same switch. But we did. I did get my 3,500 miles of walking in before that. The key for us, we did have relatively lightweight hiking shoes, but very good ones, and we used inside of it a support that was called Smart Feet that really helped us, and then we had good socks that Smart Feet socks, so
Smart Wool.
So the combination of the socks, the liner, and the shoes provided us with what we needed, and then we had the good opportunity to have two pair of shoes that we switched daily so that the shoe we wore one day would dry for 24 hours before we would put it back on. That made a big difference.
And did you wear out a pair of what was the gear like when you got back?
Well,
we wore out basically the soles. We lost a lot of the tread on the bottom. The shoes themselves held together very well, but the sole was getting worn down. So when we got back to Minnesota, we were able to each get another new pair.
Okay. Let's see. Here we have a, hang on, there's a comment on Facebook. Julie writes, I have a personal slogan. She says, I walk to know.
Huh. It's a good slogan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wanted to use that to ask you about you. Besides, actually, you wanted to make this trek, you wanted to go around Lake Superior, but you had some other things that you wanted to accomplish with this trip. Talk a little bit about what your goals were, what you wanted to have happen as a result of this.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'm going to just read from our afterthoughts, our survey. Just the purpose of our adventure was to learn, to teach, to do research, observe, and record. Along the way, we gathered information and talked with people. We came away with a lot of impressions. And then we summarized those in the book. But that was very important to us, partly as a scientist and college instructor. I've worked with teachers all of my professional life, and I think it's really important that we encourage not only in our kids but in ourselves that aspect of curiosity. And so we did work with the Natural Resource Research Institute and at the University of Minnesota Duluth, the office for the Center for People and Water and Society at Michigan Tech, with the Invasive Species Program Center at Algoma University. And so as we went around, we were collecting data because we knew we were going to be closer. We could ground test some of the things that they learned from their satellite photographs. We could get specific data, and we've created a record, which we now think is going to go on to something called globe.gov, that shows our observations and photos in the four cardinal points every 3 miles when we were on the lake. So we have a reference point for people in the future to learn about the lake. And we did surveys, which were so enlightening because we met over 800 people that we talked with and found out about what they knew and how they cared about the lake.
Kate, what was the most important thing you learned on this trip?
Oh,
I know that's not really a fair question, but I'm asking it anyway.
I know.
It's what talk show hosts do.
I think the most important thing I learned was that this lake is so incredibly beautiful and overall very, very healthy. It's a lake that we drank directly out of on that canoe trip. We stuck our cups into the lake and drank. No filter, no chemicals, nothing, just drank. And it's where can you do that anymore? This lake is huge. And so it seems to many people to be invulnerable. It's so big it can't be harmed. And we learn. We are continuing to learn about various mining issues that are coming up, and we're very concerned about how they'll impact this lake. So I think it was just to know this lake better. That's what came away.
We have a caller, Brad in Eau Claire, is with us. Brad, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just a two-part question. What is your most scenic areas? I know there's a lot of beauty there, but also my wife and I have been kayaking segments of the lake, and would you recommend a round trip by canoe or kayak? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Most picturesque, most beautiful spot? Is it? It must be kind of hard to pick.
Oh, you're absolutely right. From week to week, we always had a new favorite spot. Mm-hmm. Certainly, places like Pictured Rocks, Apostle Islands, they've already been designated because people have recognized it. But there were some incredible places that we came on south of Bedigree on the Keweenaw Peninsula. There are rocks and patterns in the rocks that were psychedelic, if you will, for those of you who were alive in the 60s like I was. And these rock patterns, I was just blown away by them. I had no idea there was such. These were all sandstones, but they had amazing patterns and shapes and colors in them. That was gorgeous and just so entertaining. Tuamanon Bay, where we walked across for 5.2 miles that we actually walked in the water there, was beautiful and remote, and we could shallow, and we could watch all of the fish and clams and everything.
I think, though, I think in terms of scenic value and the combination with kayaking or canoeing, personally, I don't think I'd canoe in the lake just because it can change so quickly, except if you're in a big Voyageur canoe with 12 other people. But the Ontario side, where we were in that Pakasaw Peninsula, because you can find coves and sand beaches that you just would never expect to find, and they are so remote. That's the only way to get there is by boat. Mm-hmm. So quite a few people do kayak that side, and for good reasons, because really the scenic value is amazing.
That would be from Pakasaw to Wawa on the map.
Would you would you recommend that someone try to make a kayak trek around Lake Superior?
Well, you know, quite a few people have already done that, and there were two young men. The summer we were out on our walk, two young men from UMD, Lucas
Will and Greg Petrie,
were kayaking around the lake, and they were going the opposite direction of us, and we actually passed one another when we were in the Voyageur canoe on that part of the trip.
Wow.
And so they had their own adventure and have done programs about that as well.
And they had some very close encounters. There are some places where, because of the rocks, there's no shelter, and you get around a corner and you suddenly find that the surface of the lake changes dramatically. So you have to really be careful, and I think the key thing to a successful boat trip is to have enough flexibility that when it's not bad, you just stay in camp. Don't force it.
Mm-hmm. And it is bad.
Yeah. All right, we have some more callers. Let's go to Mary in Hershaw. Mary, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, morning. Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm just wondering if your guest has heard of Robert Sweetgall. He's with the Creative Walking Incorporated, and he walked 7 times across America, including a 11,280-mile walk through all 50 states.
Wow.
No, I'm impressed, though.
That's a lot of shoe leather.
Yeah, in fact, he walked all 50 states in 365 straight days.
Oh, my gosh.
Does he have a publication out?
Yeah, it's called creativewalking.com.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
After the show, I plan on walking to my car.
Well, thanks a lot for the interesting program. Really enjoy it.
All right. Thanks for the call. Before I forget, I one of the things I meant to ask, you mentioned, Mike, earlier that you you approach this going counterclockwise around the lake. And in the book, you talk about that process. It wasn't that there was traditionally, and in the Native American traditions of the people who have lived around the lake longest, that wasn't done. You always went clockwise, and you actually consulted with some tribal elders and some others to make sure that what you were doing wouldn't violate something.
That's right. We had sponsorship from Red Cliff and Bad River and Grand Portage. And after somebody raised this, they said, oh, you can't do this. You've got to change your plans. They heard about it beforehand, and we said, wow. Well, I mean, we've got a lot of good reasons why I want to do this, but I don't want to insult anybody. So I talked with John Monin up at Grand Portage, one of the elders, and he said, it's your journey. You have to do the journey the way that it's right for you. And he said, yes, for us, going clockwise is the way we would go. He says there are some tribes, some bands and nations said there are some that go counterclockwise like you are. And then he paused and he said, of course, we think they're wrong.
I just say they're wrong.
Well, you know, one man's ceiling is another man's floor. I guess you have alluded at least a couple of times during the broadcast today that you have another trek planned.
Yes.
Can you share anything about that with us, or is it top secret?
No. Almost as soon as we stopped walking, and I was so happy to be home, Mike started thinking, what could we do next? And it took him a few days, I guess, to come up with this next idea, which we're calling Full-Length Mississippi. And it does tie in with our full circle because we're focusing on freshwater issues, and that was one of the big components of Lake Superior, obviously. But the Mississippi River, being the greatest river in North America and almost the world, has a tremendous amount of
issues and history, and ties into 32 states that drain into it, their watershed.
Wow.
And two provinces. So it's an extremely large geographic. So we're going to bicycle this time the length. We're going to do it twice. We're going to follow spring north, and we're going to follow autumn south.
That makes sense.
And tell our story. So that's about 5,000 miles.
Well, when you get back, write another book. And if I'm still here, we'll talk about it. We have another call to get in here, too. Kelly in Jefferson wants to join us this morning. Kelly, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. I just want to know if you do this again, this type of walk, or this specific walk.
Well, I've always said that no, because we've done it once, and I don't need to do it again, but I'm very, very glad that we did it the first time. When we walked, we never once got up any morning and thought or said, what are we doing and what were we thinking? Every day we got up and we were excited to go out. Even if Mike had a bad night, he was ready to go that next morning and see what we might discover. So I wouldn't do it again because I've done it, but I'm very glad we did it once.
But you'll see that we will do other things. I think it's a matter of there's so many good opportunities. We need to keep exploring that. And yet we're drawing back to Lake Superior all the time. We're coming back and exploring portions of it, even though they're not walking all the way around it. Our love for this lake is as strong as ever.
She does draw you back to herself, doesn't she?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Talk about the last day. You're walking and you're in Minnesota. You're heading back. You caught your first sight of, there's a picture there. You have of the lift bridge as you're coming in that. What were you thinking as you're on that last, you've made the last turn, you're on the last lap. What were you thinking?
Well, I think we were both euphoric that day. It was a gorgeous day. Clear blue sky, beautiful temperature, and then we were met by family members who'd come from as far as Seattle, Colorado, Montana, to join us on this last mile or so back. And then when we got near on the boardwalk near Leif Erikson Park, up above there was a whole flock of people hanging over the railing, waving at us and cheering, and smiling. I think I was just overwhelmed by the apparent joy of all these people to what we'd done, which was walk. And it just caused both of us to float almost, even Mike on his bad joints, to float back to our starting point.
Before we close here, we're about... Amazingly enough, we're about running out of time. Where can we find your book?
The book is in Barnes and Nobles all throughout Wisconsin, but also I would recommend that people either go directly to Lake Superior Magazine, who is the publisher, and buy from their site, or even better, go to their independent bookstores and ask them to order it and get it in for them. But okay. Lake Superior Magazine is the publisher.
And they have a website, lakesuperior.com. You can find out more information about the book. Thank you so much for spending this time this morning. It's been fascinating.
Well, thank you for having us here, John.
Mike Link and Kate Crowley, the authors of the book, Going Full Circle, a 1,555-mile walk around the largest lake in the world, at least by surface area. This is a book that's available now. You can go out and look for it. Online or in a bookstore near you. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who also handled on-air production. Stick around. Larry Mueller is in next after the news, and I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and we'll try and explain what venture capitalism is. You won't want to miss that. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of WPR.